And now you are up to date at 5:06. Hi, everybody. It's time for Spectrum West. Welcome to a look in the rear view mirror. That is one of the toughest words to say in radio, or toughest combos, rear view mirror. We'll also look a little bit in the crystal ball. We're looking back at 2012, looking ahead to 2013. My trusty sidekick, no, not Poncho, not Tonto, and not Robin, but Jim Oliver is here with me. Jim, good to have you along.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Yes, it is. Jim, of course, does a lot of our segments on Spectrum West. He likes to talk with authors, and he likes to talk with people who are involved in the theater. And since we're looking back, let's go all the way back as a kickoff to today's show. Let's find out about the beginnings of this popular WPR feature, which, in talking with senior regional manager Dean Kallenbach, began in 1994. So 2013 is going to be rather special.
This program is the end of the 19th year of the show. The program started in the first week of January, so the 20th year begins in January 2013. So we'll have to have some partying and celebrating to do that.
All for that, yeah.
A fellow by the name of Eric Wheeler came to me with the idea. Eric was a local businessman, but very interested in the folk music scene in particular, and very interested in radio, and had done some work on WUEC, had sat in as a volunteer on that programming at that time, and was really interested in developing a show about the arts and culture, in particular the music scene, but really expanding to all areas. So we talked about it, and we developed it, and again, it did have a strong folk music emphasis, but we also did, I remember the very first show, or the first month of the show, we did a feature on a local rock band called Voodoo Love Mint. That I don't know if that band is still around anymore. I haven't seen it. And then we expanded into visual arts and many of the things that Spectrum West is now. The program often, in those days, usually maybe two segments and then an arts calendar. Eric did the show for several years, ended up moving away, and was picked up by a fellow who had been working with Eric on the show by the name of Jack Beaver. Jack brought much more of a literary tone to the show. Jack himself was a poet and was interested in exploring the literary arts, and he started building a consortium of people to work with him. Alan Jenkins would do a feature a month on the literary world. Lori Beasy would do a feature a month on the visual arts. Mm-hmm. And then Deb Finstead would do a theater piece. The late Deb Finstead would do a piece on theater usually once a month or so. And that worked for a while. And then Kathy Stahl started as the person who put together the arts calendar. Jack eventually moved on to a position that required so much attention that he couldn't do Spectrum West anymore, and Kathy picked up the reins and took the show in an entirely different direction. Her focus was, let's do more segments, let's get more things into the show, and so we tightened the segments and were able to talk about four or five things in a program and really shine the show up a lot. And then, of course, you worked with Kathy and as part of that transition when you came on the show several years ago. And, and of course, we've added people like Jim Oliver and Brady Mern. And, of course, stepping back to other people, I know Chris McCallum worked with you for the early part of your tenure and also worked with Kathy on the show. So we've had a lot of people helping with it through the years. But the focus of the show has always been the same, and that is, let's spotlight the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin. That theme really hasn't changed in the almost 20 years of the show.
The word that I tripped over and had trouble with at the beginning was humanities.
Yeah.
And we talked about that on the show. Humanities is...
it's a broad
It
word.
Actually gives us, it opens it up for me. Someone will say, how does that fit Spectrum West? I go, it's humanities.
And that's the idea. I mean, the concept is that we can talk about a chili cook-off or something like that if it catches the... if it catches the creative ear of the host, producer. So the idea is that, you know, it's whatever makes life kind of fun to live, and that can stretch into a lot of different areas.
Wisconsin Public Radio as a statewide entity, they are behind these kinds of things, this regional kind of programming.
Right. When the regions were built back in the early 90s, the concept of the regions was, let's have you go out and see what you can do to connect to the community. And shows like Spectrum West and The West Side, which debuted about 12 years ago now. Those programs were designed to focus on just that. Let's do public radio things, but let's do it to really focus on Western Wisconsin, as opposed to the statewide, which is what much of our programming is, or national, which some of our programming is. So we try for the same quality. We try for the same sort of approach to things, but with a local bent.
You know, and I think this region, being Western Wisconsin, this region really does lend itself to the subject matter of a Spectrum West. In the years that I've been doing it, and I guess I'm just about to pass. In fact, I think I just completed my 180th show, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Come 20th year and 200th show, that's going to be a big party.
Yeah.
Big party.
Start ordering the catering now.
Yes, you should, yes. This area, it just blows me away how many people we have to talk to within a relatively focused realm of discussion. The theaters and the writers and the artists and the art tours, and it's amazing. And the musicians, I mean, the music speaks for itself.
Well, there have been a lot of organizations that have been around for a long, long time that have sort of anchored that art scene. But I think even in recent years, we've seen the cultivation of creative new ways to express that, and sometimes that's new organizations, sometimes it's a new band and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think we've got new venues. The communities are working on new venues all the time. Really, since Spectrum West came on back in 1994, we've seen the development of the Heidi Center, the renovation of the Mabel Tainter Theater, even the venues themselves. You know, we've seen some development and cultivation. And of course, you've been very involved in the coverage we've had this year of the proposed Confluence Center.
Yeah.
So I think that indeed the arts have been blossoming, and I'd like to think that we were a part of helping that to happen.
I'll bet we were. So I think we have some celebrating to do this year, I see. And as I said, I'm all for that. This is Spectrum West at 513. Jim Oliver is with me today. Another bright new rising star on the horizon is a young man who always seems to have fresh batteries, Brady Murn. He appeared before us last summer looking for things to do, and it became quickly apparent that he has what it takes to add even more flavorful ingredients to our Spectrum stew, and we quickly threw him into the action without much in the way of an introduction. So we sat down with him the other day and said, who is this Brady Murn?
Okay, long story short, I was born in Florida. I remember nothing of it.
Really? That's too bad.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year.
Exactly. I was all of 1 or 2 years old when I moved back to Chippewa Falls, so this is my hometown. And I went to school at the University of Minnesota. Before that, I'm a graduate of Chippewa Falls Senior High, one of two high schools in the town. I got a degree in marketing, a Bachelor of Science in Business. So I've got these two sides to me. There's the reporter side, and then there's the marketer side. I haven't quite figured out if I want to be a producer or a reporter yet, but it's fun to have that mix.
Well, you've done a little bit of stuff with us. Is anything becoming clearer now, or is it still kind of an open season?
You know, the methods with which I produce have become more clear. Sure, I know stylistically what is the norm, what people should do. I like to surprise. You know, I like to play around a bit, and I love to have the kind of creative license that comes from being in charge of the direction of a piece. I think I'd appreciate an editor, but
we all would.
That's sort of the reporter's dream. You know, reporters have to have editors in order to be their very best.
Before you came to us here at Spectrum West, and you're going to be doing some reports every once in a while, you do have some experience doing this kind of thing. Tell us where you got that experience.
I worked for the University of Minnesota's radio station, KUOM. I worked for a program called Culture Q. It was a half-hour news magazine aired on the weekends, and much like this show, it touched on arts and cultural issues. And
Culture Q.
Q-U-E-U-E. It's a neat show, entirely run by college students who are just fascinated by things at the university and in the greater Twin Cities area. And sometimes we had themed episodes. Sometimes it was just an amalgam of different ideas all fighting for a half hour of airtime. But I've done stories on reruns in everyday life, demolition of buildings on our campus. I've also done pieces on the greening of co-ops, how it is they recycle their foods if they do their composting. I did pieces short and long, a piece on Muggle Quidditch.
Cool.
Sounds like an interesting sport. It's slowly gaining traction at the U of M, but lots of different pieces, and three here.
Three. Stellar.
Thank you.
And, you know, we've talked about doing a series on theaters in Western Wisconsin, which I think we may pursue. But, you know, I think after hearing your style a few times, I was going through a list of things that I would love to cover and people with whom we'd like to speak on Spectrum West. I think some of them are right up your alley. So be ready for some surprises in 2013.
Well, I like the sound of that. One of the things I fear the most is being put in a box. I did a piece on the Erica Kwam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. Spoke with Lori Bacham over there.
Mm-hmm.
I also did a little spotlight on the Chippewa County Historical Society. And then
I remember that.
Shortly thereafter, I worked with the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts, the Menominee Theater Guild, and did a piece on a production of 12 Angry Men, which just wrapped up mid-December.
Mm-hmm. There is a piano player that I think I'd like you to talk to. There's also, I came across the subject called The Science of Musical Sound.
Oh, I like that. In marketing class, we did a whole unit on sonic branding. The beep, beep, beep of the WPR stations is one of those signature sounds that fits into that whole umbrella category of sonic branding. Whether we're aware of it or not, we've got these different recognizable sounds that kind of clue you into what you're listening to, whether it's the opening of NBC Nightly News or the switching between different stations, sonic branding in everyday life. So the science behind music. Any more information on that?
I would like you to toss and turn. Oh, I wonder what that is. I can't wait. It's kind of like Christmas morning.
Yeah.
Those will be fun things. And that's what I'm going to do is as I receive things, and thank goodness I do receive lots of stuff from lots of people. And we should point out that we do appreciate that. I'm going to keep you in mind. Yeah, this is kind of a Brady thing.
Honestly, my biggest problem is the degree of fascination with which I approach almost every subject. You really throw something around your head and you just get into it. And I want to be a jack of all trades, not just one domain.
Can you envision something that you would not want to do?
I don't think there's anything that I outright wouldn't want to do. I don't think I'd make a very good cut and dry sportscaster.
Ah, but we're not going to cover sports.
Okay.
Unless there's an artistic side to sports. And I'm sure there is. And if there is, we'll find it on Spectrum West.
You know, I can kick the ball in the right direction. I just can't always make the goal.
That's okay. It's how you play the game. Well, okay. Anything else you want to tell people?
Can we talk briefly about web business?
Yeah. Let's point out that Brady is going to bring us into some pretty innovative social media modes of contact.
Again, putting on my hat as a marketing major.
Ah.
It's all about level of involvement. You hear about something in a fleeting instance on the radio and think, gosh, I want to know more about that. We want to have a place to go online that is a signature Spectrum West space with more information about the various artists and venues, maybe some extras appearing on the site. That's sort of the visual complement to the audio nature of this program.
Yep. There you go. That's Brady Mearn, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be with us, you know, at various times throughout the new year, 2013. We look forward to his input. It's 20 minutes after 5. Wisconsin Public Radio is your source for great conversations, news you can trust, and music that inspires. Your gift of any amount is very important. As we close out 2012 with just 4 days left in the year, you can still make a difference at WPR. Just go to WPR.org and click Donate. And thank you. We're in the old year, new year version of Spectrum West today. Jim Oliver is with me. We'll be talking with Jim momentarily. You know, when one talks with those who have been around the block, people who have attained a level of success aspired to by so many, one often learns things that didn't make mainstream media. Back in January of 2012, we talked with guitarist and songwriter Keb Mull. Things like Orville Gibson, Martha Stewart, The Living Theme, the final West Wing episode theme, Special Olympics to Victoria's Secret. Those were things that Keb Mull wrote and played. Let's remind ourselves about how Keb Mo's relationship with music started.
Well, music came in early through church, you know. Okay. That's where you get your first snippet of it. And being that I was raised in the Baptist church, I got some pretty big snippets.
Yeah.
And then at 10, I started playing the trumpet in the school band, beginning band, in fifth grade. And from there, I went on to playing steel drums.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got in the high school band. On the high school, I switched and started playing French horn. And then the senior year, I started playing in the cover band, you know. Then from there on and out into the world of trying to make a living as a musician. Fast forward, fast forward, fast forward, fast forward. Up, down, way up, way low, way down, down, up, steady, and then kept moving.
Yeah. Inside, outside, too. That's
yes.
Cool. Well, yeah, the guitar, though, I mean, that's kind of your baby now.
Yeah, I started playing the guitar at 12, a long 2 years after the trumpet started. I started playing the guitar, and I played that for a long time. I had a guitar, and I just knew a little stuff on it. And I just always kind of like, I still just kind of tinker around with it. You know what I mean?
And yet you keep winning awards for that stuff.
Yeah, tinkering. I tinker around, and I win awards.
Keb Moe produces his own stuff. You have to nowadays, he says. Takes a long time. This guy, Kevin Moore. Keb Moe and Kevin Moore, are they...
Same guy.
Same guy. I mean, wow. you don't put on a whole different persona when you want to be Keb Moe.
No.
No.
No, they're the same guy. They're just one guy. It depends on what you want to call them. It's like, you know, it's like Bill and William.
Oh, okay. Just one of those memorable conversations on Spectrum West. The time is 5:23.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org.
Spectrum West, the old year, new year version, as we say goodbye to 2012 and hello to 2013. Jim Oliver is here with me. Jim, you talk with a lot of theater people. And the decisions on what to produce and what to present aren't always easy ones, it appears.
No, there's an awful lot of stuff going on, and it's really tough to try to, when it gets down to two theaters are doing a show starting the same night, and you try to decide. I get to do one segment a week, and so it's tough to decide which one I want to use. And sometimes it gets down to who did we do last, and mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, kind of spread the word around from theater to theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that's what it's helpful to have the on stage,
yes.
Segment, which we can mention everybody who's doing whatever they're doing.
We do our best.
So anyway, it's interesting. One of the early shows I did last year mm-hmm. was a play called Spring Awakening, which was done at the Eau Claire Children's Theater. And I have a warm spot in my heart for the Children's Theater because Wayne Merrick was the very first person I ever interviewed for a segment on Spectrum West.
Well, there you go.
Back in 2004. So I've been around Ooh. For a while. I've been around here longer than you have, so...
No kidding.
Watch it there, fella. Anyway, the show at that time was a musical. It was called Clue the Musical, based on Clue the board game, of course. And so that was... that turned out to be a lot of fun, and I've been doing that stuff ever since. And so a lot of the children's theater stuff is kid shows, which is great. That's the idea. But they come up with a show called Spring Awakening, this last spring, which... it's an 1890s play written by a guy named Frank Wedekind. And it was considered controversial at one time, and Wayne Merrick talked about the controversy and all of the stuff that's involved in production of such a play. This is a particularly interesting topic I discovered as I looked into the play. Now, you've never shied away from more mature topics at the Children's Theater, and this one carries a For Mature Audiences label and suggests parental discussion. So what's that all about?
Correct. It does have certainly those things in the show, language, brief nudity, the thematic subjects that would make it for mature audiences. And we were real careful to pick the verbiage as far as parental discussion encouraged because of the subject matter and the age of the performers in the show. Of course, all the performers in the show are college age and up, but they do portray kids that are 14 to 16 years old in the show. The subject matter really does speak to middle school and high school students. but it's probably not something that we would encourage them to come by themselves. We really would like some parental discussion and the parents maybe to come with them so that they can open up a dialogue about what they're seeing on stage and some of the topics that are raised.
Weideken's play was self-published in 1891, and it wasn't performed in Germany until 1906. A 1917 production in New York ran for just one matinee after it was almost banned for being pornographic. The musical opened on Broadway in 2006 and won 8 Tony Awards. So what changed, the subject matter or the times?
The subject matter couldn't be any more relevant today. I think probably the times have changed so that the subject matter is more accepting to be seen on stage in the public. It's, you know, been brought out more, but the topics, you know, the play, you know, the musical is based on the play. They're still the same today. I mean, it really deals with those topics that are brushed aside by a, I don't want to say a repressive society, but a conservative society that says, if we don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. And if you don't know about it, you won't get in trouble. We'll protect you. You don't need to know about things, sexual things. You know, the more you don't know about it, the more you'll be protected and it won't happen to you. And the musical clearly shows the disastrous effects when young people's questions are left unanswered. We end up with a teen suicide, teen depression. There's sexual abuse. There's all of these things that are happening. And the kids in the show need answers to these questions, to what's going on around them.
Wayne Merrick of the Eau Claire Children's Theater.
Well, along came February of 2012, and a book crossed my desk that I simply had to know more about, The Dead Celebrity Cookbook. The author, Frank DeCaro, the flamboyant columnist and headliner who made a big name for himself as the movie critic on The Daily Show, was the author and was our guest. Well, Frank, congratulations on a great book. I mean, many books deal with a theme and then they proceed to beat it to death, but yours, in my mind, accomplishes several things, and that's the mark of great reading. As people go through this book, I found, they learn little tidbits of stuff about the featured cooks, ultra-famous folks, by the way. But one also gets to chuckles along the way. And then after all that is soaked in, we get out the measuring spoons and the sifters and the basting brushes and actually go to work making delicious things.
I think that's the best review I've ever gotten in my life of anything I've ever done, and I appreciate it. Sure. Yeah, I was really trying to get people not only in their kitchens to try all the recipes from the Dead Celebrity Cookbook, but to offer a viewer's guide to sort of get people up to snuff on their pop culture history. I do a radio show of my own, and the interns never know what the heck I'm talking about. They're 20 years old, and they don't know any of the people that I allude to. And I'm hoping that with a book like this, that other people who may or may not know who Greer Garson is will suddenly be able to make her caparatada, I knew who Greer Garson was. I just didn't know what caparatada was. But it was like a sort of a French toasty kind of dish. So I'm hoping they'll get a bit of a pop culture history lesson here.
The obsession began, from what I read, you went to a party, a dead celebrity party once, years ago.
Back in college, I went to Northwestern, and one cold winter, we decided to have a dead celebrity party, and we all went dressed as our favorite dead celebrities. And I think that planted the seed for my cookbook, but it also started me collecting celebrity recipes, and I was buying everything.
Our guest is Frank DeCaro. He's a radio host. He's an author. He's a columnist. He's a TV icon. What else am I missing there, Frank?
I'll take icon. I think that's good. I'll go for that, I think. No, I don't know. That's about everything.
Okay.
It's just anything I can do to justify being me and keep gainfully employed, I will do.
Fun conversation with Frank DeCaro. It's 5:30 on Spectrum West, and I wanted to play that simply to give people ideas for a winter party, a dead celebrity party. I think that should be a lot of fun. And then we went from seasoned veteran to seasoning of another kind, the Joe Luganbill phenomenon. We welcomed the Eau Claire native to the program in September during the media storm that was his catapult into American consciousness, a young red-haired yet very confident cook, mentioned in the same breath with the Martha Stewarts of the culinary commercial set. We're talking with Joe Luganbill, and the topic is Joe's Kitchen. He's kind of a media phenom, and he got his start on YouTube, and as you've been hearing, he's been noticed by some pretty impressive people. When you were talking with Martha, you know, and she said sautéing and slow roasting and things, It's a little bit of an uphill battle, I would think, for a young guy like you who is very much caught up in the fast society to try to convince young people to slow down as it pertains to cooking, because nowadays it's microwave this and convenience food that. So you've got a task in front of you.
Yeah, well, that's basically what you said is my main talking point with people. When people ask me what my goal in cooking is, it is to make it accessible, fun, and easy, because that's what people need now. They need all three. People aren't going to cook otherwise. If cooking isn't fun, what's the point? If it's not easy, what's the point?
Yeah, but how are you going to then give Martha what she asked for, and that is teach people to slow roast?
Well, you do have to teach them that. You do. But it does take time, and you have to realize that with that, you're going to have to make that fun in some way. It is really easy for kids to go get fast food.
Oh, you know, they do it all the time?
It is.
We all do it all the time.
Yeah, I do it all the time. You really have the main thing with people. Sauteing or whatever, you know, those skills can be difficult.
Yes.
When you first start out, but you really have to sell them, you know, by saying fast food adds up. You could cook and you could have that meal for a couple nights in a row and it would save you a heck of a lot of money.
Right.
You know, if you just know these skills, you just have to make that first commitment.
Are you developing kind of a hook? The Joe Luganbill persona? I mean, you're already unique because you're such a young guy, but are you looking for a, you know, something that makes you into a male version of Paula Deen or whatever? Is that her name?
Yeah, Paula Deen.
I don't watch those shows.
Yeah. Right? Well, you know, I think my main hook, the main reason I think people watch me is because I make cooking look fun. I make it look easy. I might be making Julia Child's Bœuf Bourguignon, but I'm really making it look about as easy as you can make it look. And I'm making it as easy as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really my goal. So, I mean, kind of like an everyman's cook kind of thing. You know, anyone can cook, especially young people.
Joe Luganbill. And since his appearance in September, he's been asked to be a keynote speaker at the International Redhead Conference. We'll have a feature story in Celebrity Cooking Magazine and is signed with PMG, a division of which deals with celebrity chefs and lifestyle personality. So more on Joe as all that time passes. It's 5:33 on the old year, new year version of Spectrum West. You know, we like to talk about music here on the show. Orchestras, singers, jazz bands, folk artists, rock icons. And Jim talked with a gentleman earlier this year who wrote a play around a certain brand of music. Tell us about that, Jim.
Well, the musical duo of Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, for those of us who are of an age, remember well, they were called the Righteous Brothers. And Jim Zimmerman, who is the head of the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson, wrote a musical production with the help of Bill Medley, who was a surviving member of the group. Bobby Hatfield died in 2003. And he talked about the music of the Righteous Brothers. "You've lost that love and feeling," stands as the most played song in the history of American radio. "Unchained Melody" has since been called the best love song of all time. Well, we got to talk about the music that is included in this show and tell us a little bit about how the music is presented.
I'll tell you, it's the gem in the whole thing. I mean, "Unchained Melody," "Ebb Tide," which was done around that same time, similar feel as "Unchained Melody." "You've Lost That Loving Feeling," "Soul and Inspiration," "Rock and Roll Heaven," the iconic numbers that the Righteous Brothers did. There's, you know, song after song after song that bring back memories, and it helps you put it in perspective of where they were at, how they were created. When Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil created "You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling," basically they did it as an up-tempo piece and brought it to Phil Spector, who was then at that time producing for Bill and Bobby. And they played it for him. They sat there in the Marriott Hotel and pitched it to Bill and Bobby as this sort of up-tempo piece in F, which doesn't mean a lot other than the fact that it was way too high for Bill and Bobby. They permuted it through Phil Spector's vision for the thing into a piece that was dropped way down into C, slowed way down. In fact, when Bill heard it, he said, "The jocks are going to think they're playing this thing at the wrong speed. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it on radio ever has been." And it turned out to be just the most popular piece of music played on radio.
Jim Zimmerman talking about the Righteous Brothers. I had an opportunity in October to be in New York. That sounds cosmopolitan, doesn't it?
But
anyway, we saw, my wife and I saw The Jersey Boys, which is a similar play based on the career of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. So I thought The Righteous Brothers, Frankie Valli, the Four Seasons.
What you are hobnobbing with the big time stuff. Pretty cool stuff. You know, and we had a lot of fun, we being Western Wisconsin and even the entire state of Wisconsin, watching the journey of Ellsworth native on American Idol, Mr. Reed Grimm. We placed a phone call as he survived that experience. Tell me what's different about the American Idol experience other than the fact that there's cameras catching most of what you do all the time.
Yeah. You know, you're surrounded by just some of the most amazing talent in the country. The most amazing singers, and I know that I'm not the greatest singer. You know, looking at the talent out there, there are some singers that just sing circles around me with their vocal ability. I appreciate, not only appreciate that, but I'm just fascinated by it and just trying to absorb, you know, everything that I can from everyone. What's different about it is that, you know, yes, there are cameras, but it's like a big camp. It's like a big music camp where everybody has the same dream and everybody has the same goal, and it just happens to be in front of 20 million people.
Now, that was on February 17th, and alas, by March 9th, Reed Grimm had reached the end of the Idol Road, albeit having made the top 24. We talked again at lunch this time, just a few miles from his Wisconsin home. And after trying and failing four other times, but finally making it fairly big, just without someone else's persona, he had some advice for other young entertainers.
That's like the biggest thing that I can say to anyone. Relax, be yourself, you know, and continue to do that. Continue to trust that, because, like I said, you know, I've had moments of self-doubt on trying to be like, oh, these other voices are huge, and I need to be this and that. That's just not the case. Big lesson. Big lesson.
To shoot for the stars. If it feels right, aim for my heart. If you feel like it, take me away.
That was a lot of fun following Reed. And we are going to have him on in a program in 2013, there we go, to see what's new in his life. Reed Grimm. Spectrum West, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us. I like to mention those guests who appear somewhat frequently on our show. We don't play favorites. Some people are simply continuously active. And one good example of that is Don Hodgins, a guy Jim Oliver spends time with on occasion. Yes,
poor Jim? Don Hodgins. I abuse him so badly when he comes in, and he still keeps coming. Don is an actor, director, internationally produced playwright, and theater director at Fannie Hill Dinner Theater, the senior of the two dinner theaters we have in this region.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on twice this past year. One was Fox on the Fairway, which is a farce. And then his alter ego, it comes out every year at Christmas. This year it was Mr. Christmas, which is still playing, by the way, for another several performances, I believe. And he plays his own alter ego, Rudy Poznarski. And so it's always fun to talk to Don about Rudy and how he is actually... Other theaters produce his productions, and one of his Christmas plays was produced north of here somewhere. And but I finally got to him about made him talk about drama in dinner theater, which is hardly ever thought about. But I asked him, if he had ever done drama in the first place. He went to college here in Eau Claire, UW-Eau Claire, and then worked at a theater in Iowa, and then some 35 or so years ago came up here and with a partner and started the dinner theater at Fannie Hill. So I talked to him about drama and why it works sometimes and why it would be a possibility sometimes in dinner theater. I imagine it'd be quite a challenge or quite a risk, actually, for a dinner theater to do anything other than comedy, wouldn't you suppose?
Well, it is. Yeah, we're there to make people laugh. That is true. But, you know, when you get a good drama, has comedic aspects to it. That's my opinion. As conversely, good comedy has dramatic aspects to it. So, you know, because not everything's all black and white. There's shades of gray of everything. So, and drama, you know, done well is good. It's good stuff. Theater is good. It's engrossing And with drama, you tend to get better character development. They tend to delve into the psyche of the characters a little more than you do in comedy. So I think that, and once people get into that, I think there's an appreciation there for that type of thing. Now, I wouldn't do it all the time out there. You know, that was probably the last drama. We've done what I have called dramatic comedies in the past. As an example, Neil Simon's Chapter 2. Mm. Neil, you know, he writes mostly comedy, and Chapter 2 is too, but it's also about the death of his first wife and his establishing a new relationship with his then second wife. So it wasn't all fun and games. So yeah.
Simon had this kind of a stage where he was doing more heavy comedies.
And his boy, what was the name of his? He had a Pulitzer Prize winner too. That went both ways, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are prominent actors who get their start in local theater and then go on to bigger stages elsewhere. Can you point to anyone like that who got their start at?
We've had quite a few people that are in one aspect or another in the theater and also the film business. Probably the most prominent one would be Lila Robbins. She was a student at the university here, but also performed at Fannie Hill. She's worked Broadway, been on television, movies, against the big hitters and stuff. Periodically performs up at the Guthrie, over in the Twin Cities. Pat O'Brien, who I mentioned earlier, is another one. Pat was in a lot of movies, done a lot of stage work and in big theaters and everything. Jim Detmar is another one, worked for Disney for years, and he's based out of the Twin Cities now. Mike Speller, television, movies, stage work. There's quite a list. You know, the big guns come from somewhere, and they you're right. They tend to be like places like the Fannie Hill Dinner Theater.
Jim Oliver and Don Hodgins, back from April of 2012. Also in the spring, comedian Bill Engvall, one of those famous blue-collar funny guys, came to West Wisconsin, and we were fortunate to link up with him. While he was on the road.
For my birthday this year, my wife gave me a gym membership, which is one of those gifts that you go, oh, you know, it's like giving a guy a certificate for hair plugs.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I guess you think I'm fat.
You're doing this because you want me to be around longer.
That was her excuse. How do you argue with that?
You know, I know. Like, you were going to be a teacher, I read. You want what did you want to teach? Elementary?
I was going to teach elementary kids.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to get them before they became too smart alecky. You know, I think teachers in their own rights are entertainers. And my proof is, if you think back in your education years, if you had a teacher that really made learning fun, you can remember their names. And I can remember, like, back to my kindergarten teacher, there's like a handful of them I can remember their names.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm not really into discipline the kids, so they would have loved me.
Well, I got one thing that's really going well for you here coming to Western Wisconsin. There are a lot of Norwegians here.
Ah.
Engvall is Norwegian, yes?
Yep. It was funny. Back in my family tree, our name used to be Swenson. But apparently somebody thought that was just too easy, so let's get a name no one can remember.
Wow.
A lady sent me a Swedish phone book page that had Engvall. And Engvall in Sweden is like Smith, but you'll see like Engvall Cleaners, Engvall Donuts. So I got to get back there someday. Maybe I'll be somebody.
Well, Bill, you really cut out for comedy, because one thing I like about you, and I did a lot of research, and in doing that research, I ran across lots of photographs of you. And the way you pose, the way you smile, always appears as if you're hiding something.
You know, it's funny you bring that, because someone has I've had several people say that, and I don't mean to do it, but I guess it's just, I guess ever since I was a kid, there was that little bit of a dark side to me, that kind of like the kid, like when you catch your kid doing something wrong and they kind of grin at you, like, you totally knew you were doing that.
Bill Engvall. And 2012 seemed to be the year for comedians coming to our neck of the woods. We were fortunate to talk with most of them, Louis Anderson and Paul Cesario. Were a couple more names to drop. 545 on Spectrum West, the old year, new year version. Thanks for being with us.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Ken Vance Volkswagen, featuring the 2013 Volkswagen Passat, a family sedan available in 14 trims, with each model having its own technology features. More at kenvance.com. Support also comes from Festival Foods, offering gift cards that can be used store-wide for groceries, fruit baskets, party platters, hot deli lunches, bakery items, and much more. Details are at festfoods.com.
Fly me to the moon. We Hope we're doing that here on Spectrum West. What do you say we talk writers for a bit? Jim Oliver, as you know, is with me today live. Jim talked with a woman with a niche. That's niche, not woman with a niche. Niche. And I'll bring back a poet just after that. So, Jim, what do you got?
Well, Ellie Mason Johnson, I've talked to her twice now, once last year and the once the year before. Her latest play is Ole's Dead and Lena's Dating. And I accuse her of abusing poor Lena and Ole, the Norwegian characters of, or subjects of many Norwegian jokes, but she argued that no, absolutely not, that wasn't the case. Ellie is the program director at St. Croix Art Barn in Osceola, and her husband Neil is the artistic director, so they got a family thing going there. But I had asked her a year ago, she had written a play called Pause, which is for mature women, she called it, and then Ole's Dead, Lena's Dating is also for mature women. So I asked her a year ago if she wouldn't do plays for mature men, which was kind of self-serving, but she said, well, she'd think about it. And then it became rather evident that she wasn't going to do that. So she told me why this past year.
Here's that conversation.
As I remember the last time we spoke, which was about a year ago, you had written a play called Pause, which you said was for mature women. Is this another play for mature women?
Writers, we have to write from our own experience.
You know, that reminds me that the last time we spoke, I asked that, had you considered writing plays for mature men, and you seemed agreeable to the idea, but now it's beginning to sound like you're probably not going to do that.
Well, you know, I don't. The only mature man that I have a lot of experience with is my husband. I don't know that he'd appreciate it. And plus, I don't know all your secrets. We women, we have things that we share. I'm not sure that I would be good at that. But the other challenge is, especially at the community theater level, is that we have a far more majority of women that are interested and available to be on the stage than we do men. And so it's hard for at the Art Barn, for example, to do a play with a lot of men because we just can't seem to get them to come out.
Yeah. 5:48 on Spectrum West. Poets are always great to talk with. Poet laureates, no less, have been guests on our show, and we'll have the new Wisconsin Poet Laureate on next week's program. But one of my personal favorites is a guy named Todd Boss. For some reason, his poems click with me. Books Yellow Rocket and Pitch, we talked again in 2012. Don't you just hate it when you feel like you're having an epiphany and things are just flowing and you feel like you're submersed in just depth? And you write something and then you read it the next morning and you go, oh, jeez, what the hell is that?
Yeah, well, why did I write something so totally obvious? Yeah, that's why drunken conversations at the bar are so hilarious, because you can find yourself writing something deep and profound on a napkin that in the morning is just totally nonsense. But I think that has to do with just different states of mind. You're right. We're not the same person, you know, in the morning that we are when we go to bed at night, and we go through different states of mind. Poetry for me helps me explore those, and then I can figure out later what thought is worth keeping around and what isn't.
Well, growing up as you did near the thriving metropolis of Fall Creek, as you write, do you think you're getting closer to who you were, or are you getting further away from it?
That's an interesting question. There's kind of vertigo in that question, isn't there? You can't help leave where you've been, but at the same time, you're looking at it closer and closer and closer, trying to bring it into focus.
Because you do write about the memories that you have.
Yeah, I think most of that is trying to source out what material in my background has contributed to making me who I am today. So it's not just that there's this endless supply of nostalgic stuff I can draw from my day-to-day diary of when I was 12. It's more, you know, I am this person writing this poem about my city life today, because of the kid or the thing that happened to me when I was that kid, you know, back in 1982, on the farm. So it's more a kind of spelunking for gems.
Only on Spectrum West can you hear the word spelunking on a regular basis. And while we're on the topic of poetry, the guy who runs the show at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory is quite an accomplished wordsmith. Jim welcomed him to the studio not long ago. Here's Jim with that.
Well, Lemoyne McLaughlin is the co-founder and executive director of the Northern Lake Center for the Arts, and he's quite a poet, and I asked him about one problem that seems to be going around about poetry, and that is that there are fewer people reading poetry, and I asked him, why is that?
Let me just preface that by saying that a study by the National Endowment for the Arts in the early 90s found that 19% of Americans read poetry. A follow-up 10 years later found that 19% had decreased to 12%. And then a further follow-up 5 years later, about 5 years ago, found that 12% had decreased to 8%, you know, and who knows where it is right now. You know, 92% of Americans do not read poetry, although they're reading more than ever before. I think we need to get back to writing more love poems. Robert Burns saw that it worked for him. And secondly, we need to write poems that tell stories.
He is Lemoyne McLaughlin. Best wishes to you, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, I talked to two other poets who are better known as mystery writers. John Loomis, who is an assistant professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, who has written a series of novels in the Frank Collins Mystery Series, the most recent one called Fire Season. And he's an award-winning poet and has a graduate degree in poetry from the University of Virginia. Yannette, I asked him, he has published three mystery novels and only two books of poetry. And so I wondered about that. And then Mary Logue, who is from, she has two homes. Do you have two homes?
Successful poem poets do.
I suppose, yeah. Well, anyway, she is also a mystery writer. She writes the Clara Watkins series from that take place in Pepin County. But she says that her foundation as a writer is in poetry. But on the other hand, she has only publishes a book of poems every 5 years. So I suppose you go where the market is, and that's apparently the case with Mary and John.
Yeah. You talk to some interesting people, you really do. And you do a good job of it.
Well,
because you're a voracious reader, that's what's so cool.
Well, you know, I read a lot, and so I have an excuse to talk to the authors, which is even more fun than just reading their stuff.
Yeah. Well, one of the highlights of my year, at least as that light pertains to national celebrities, was the opportunity to hang with Peter Yarrow on the phone prior to a couple appearances in our neighborhood. The first name in the Peter, Paul, and Mary musical legend was a joy to talk with. Quickly became apparent that he talks with as much passion as he sings. While some people consider the passing of legacies from generation to generation as sort of a relay, he has a slightly different perspective about that action. You've kind of, from what I read, have that same perspective, although you like to think of it as a train ride.
Right. I think of it as this body of music and people sharing it who are on that train. The legacy of those behind have enriched the perspectives of those who are on the train, and when you get on, you share what you have to share, and then when your time is over, that music and that effect continues. It presupposes the idea of a certain kind of, what should I say, of continuity.
Sure.
So that you're not alone. And Mary is with me whenever I sing. She's not gone. Her spirit, what she's said, what she's done, what she's stood up for, has profoundly influenced the people who have heard the music and who have come to the concerts or seen the programs on PBS. It's a very warm feeling to feel that. It's a very good feeling to feel that a closure means a continuity as well. It's just a different vantage point, but her presence in my life and in the music is profound. You know, it's nice that I came up with the analogy of the train ride long before I experienced Mary's passing, because one might say that I was trying to hang on in dubiously healthy ways, but I don't feel that way at all. That's the paradigm, and it works. Right now is a crucial time, and performing with this legacy in my heart and in my music and in my feelings about the people that I'm performing to, knowing that they're small audiences compared to what Peter Paul Mary performed to. But to me, it's not about the number of people. It's about the quality of what's shared. And you never know who gets inspired and who gets interested and who becomes active and who becomes a force for trying to resolve some of the crucial dilemmas of our time. I love my work. I love my friends. I've been fortunate materially, and I've been fortunate to be involved in what people call giving back from the earliest years. And the rewards of that are obviously far greater than acquiring stuff or feeling good about myself because I own something. I mean, there's just no comparison. I work in a hospice where I sing, and you don't see people wearing jewelry and talking about the killing they made on the stock market or talking about their new car, their new home, or anything like that. All they want surrounding them is love, is to feel a sense of authenticity. And why do we have to wait to value those things as most important that we do when the chips are down and we really know what's important?
Sounds like a song to me. I think you ought to pen one.
Maybe I shall, my brother.
See, he called me my brother. That's why it was the highlight of my year. I was Peter Yarrow's brother, folks. So that covers some of our guests in 2012, of which there were hundreds: sunglass designers, sommeliers, dance professors, bubble artists, venue managers, musicians of all persuasions, actors, producers, writers, conductors, composers, those on the way up, those at the top, and some in the act of resurrecting a career. This is one of the best jobs in the world, I say, Jim. Do you agree with that?
I would say so. You actually get paid for doing this, I guess, and that's. But it's a great joy for me. I enjoy this opportunity to talk to theater people, and I certainly appreciate the cooperation that we get from all these folks.
Well, we learn from them, too. That's what's...
Yes.
We're entertained and inspired at the same time.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great opportunity to get into the depths of all this stuff rather than just watching the shows or reading the books.
No kidding. Well, thanks so much for being with me live today. I appreciate it.
Been my pleasure.
And thank you for finding Friday time for Spectrum West. 2013 will be bigger and better and right up your radio alley in new exciting ways in the coming year. I'm Al Ross. Thanks to Jim Oliver and Dean Kallenbach and Brady Mern and everybody else who has a big hand in making this program successful and fun to do. Happy New Year. Keep in touch. Spectrum West at WPR.org. And watch for new ways to communicate and interact. Happy New Year!
. 2012 was quite a year for news.
The president told the crowd that the Mitt Romney they all know was not the Romney they saw in the debate.
Whoever it was that was on stage last night doesn't want to be held accountable for what the real Mitt Romney's been saying for the last year.
Hi, I'm Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. We don't know all the stories 2013 will bring, but you can count on WPR to keep you engaged with in-depth, honest, and balanced coverage from around Wisconsin.